Hello and welcome to Pricing Heroes podcast by Competera. This is a series of interviews with the best-in-class retail pricing experts who are driving their company's bottom metrics and therefore the retail industry as a whole. Our first guest is Dr. Markus Huzman-Kapetsky, pricing advisor, researcher, and educator, ex-Amazon senior manager pricing and business analyst, founder of Price Management Institute, and author of the handbook on the psychology of pricing and pricing negative. In this episode, we discuss the current challenges of retail, how to cope and capitalize on them, and the future of pricing. Hi, Markus, and thank you for joining us. And here comes the first question right away. As an expert keeping pulse on many industry players, could you shed light on how the approach to pricing changed over the last decade?
Thank you for this excellent question. My expertise lies in the e-commerce space, so for companies selling something online. And I observe that over the last 10 plus years, companies moved more and more to a data-driven approach. And why didn't they start with a data-driven approach? That would be an excellent question. In most online stores, they started as kind of a branch to the offline channel. So there's a big brick-and-mortar store and they found a different legal entity. That's their e-commerce channel. And this e-commerce channel starts with the same pricing approach as the brick-and-mortar store, but over years they grow bigger and they become more or less the pricing lab to the brick-and-mortar store, and they develop more sophisticated models because they also have more data than if you are just having scanner data or something like this. So they started with rule-based pricing algorithms. I don't want to call them algorithms, but pricing rules, and then they move on to machine learning and artificial intelligence, for example, based on price elasticity estimates to find the optimal price. And I think we haven't reached full maturity yet, either in breadth, so not 100% of all companies are applying a scaled approach to pricing, not even data-based approach. From one case study that I did, they still upload an Excel sheet once a month with the new prices, and they do billion business, so 5+ billion, and that's crazy. And in terms of sophistication, in terms of models, for those who use data, 100% use rules, but moving beyond rules is still work in progress. That's what I experience.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing your vision on that. Well, my second question actually comes from your answer. You just mentioned the move towards artificial intelligence and machine learning as a part of the transition to demand-based pricing. So the next logical step would be to go for personalized pricing. So from your perspective, how do you see the future of pricing? Is there personalized pricing need? And how much time will we need to get to this point?
Yes, I think the future of pricing is bright. And I see a very scientific, bright future. And what do I mean with this? I think we are not talking about individualized pricing and personalized pricing, meaning an individualized price so that every single customer has for the same product a different price. But what I see are three developments, so to say. First, pricing will become, as I said, more data-driven. It's not about the procurement department who takes the procurement price, adds their target margin, and rounds it up to 99 cents. That will be gone. So they use demand, they might need cross-price elasticities, whatever. Second, once applying database pricing, the models will become more sophisticated, and we will see that more companies will really use it. So, third, and maybe I'm biased because I research a lot about psychological pricing, but I will see that we find also a professional and conscious frame around prices beyond changing the price number. So, for example, what we will see, if a customer who's conscious about quality goes onto a website, search for a product, they want to see high quality items first in their search results. Stellar brands, good reviews. Then you have price-conscious customers. They, of course, want to see relevant research results, for example, based on they are on sale, they have a sale sign to it, something like this. Of course, we also have individualized promotions. So if you have 1,000 items on promotion, of course, you cannot share an email, just to be very concrete, an email to a customer, hey, we have these 1,000 items for on sale. Of course not. But you will pick out the 30 items that have the highest probability that the customer will buy. So you don't change the sale price per se, but you make an individualized offer on the marketing side. Of course, you can go one step further. So if you have a promotional budget, of course, you can send individualized rebates and discounts to customers and say, okay, that's the normal price, that's the price for you. And of course, your neighbor might have a different set of items, but on average, both have items that fit their most and they receive a price that the other person might not receive. But it's still fair because both have different kind of benefits and nobody is taken advantage of. And that's what I see in the future. More usage, more sophisticated models, and they move into the soft art of psychological pricing, soft like quote unquote, and they use hard analytical skills to optimize this soft art of pricing.
And if we look at individual pricing from the perspective of optimal price for every customer based on their shopping history and preferences, isn't it a good move to enhance loyalty?
In this case, if you're talking about individualized pricing, like optimal pricing on an individual level, like individual customer level, we are quickly running into perception of price unfairness. So what you don't want to do or don't want to experience, and by the way, in the airlines industry, you do, if you press the F5 button to update your website or you open a secure page and you find a lower price, that's not cool. Honestly, if you have a frame around it like, hey, these are your personalized promotions, and the frame is, you receive these special prices for you, and we have a rational why we picked those items and gave you a special price. So if you can make sense of it, that customers receive a different price than somebody else and they understand why, that's perfect. Otherwise, you get into an area where people get a bad feeling about you. And you sense it already in price comparison portals. Like in Germany, you have Idealo, for example, and it's one big price comparison portal. And you click on a link there, you might receive a lower price on the target website, the target shop, than compared to when the customer would directly go to the website of the vendor. And that's not cool. Even if you receive a lower price and you feel that a normal customer who did it otherwise would pay a higher price, although you received a lower price, you get away with a bad feeling of price discrimination that is not fair, although you are benefiting in this case, but you still wonder whether you would not benefit the next time and whether this kind of behavior is actually fair from the seller. And this leaves you with some negative impression on the image. That's my passionate view on price discrimination on individual level.
I see. Thank you for clarifying. And coming back from the future to the current situation, being shaken by so many different challenges for retailers, like inflation, supply chain disruptions, and grocery overstocks in the US, for example. So speaking about the challenges, what significant changes do you anticipate in the retail space?
I would say for the next few years, we have two major shocks, I would say. We have a very high inflation. And this very high inflation together with supply chain disruptions mean two things. First, raising costs to retailers. On the other side, inflation is very closely related to fear of recession. You have people, consumers, customers out there who earn less in net terms. So inflation is eating up pretty much their disposable income. And in recessionary times, inflationary times, what we see is customers get more prudent with their money, more price conscious, they avoid excessive debt, and they try to save even more of their still available income just for, not for the bad times, but for the worst times. They postpone purchases of durable goods. So if you don't need a washing machine today, immediately, then let's do it next year. The same accounts for holidays. You see either a downgrade, a shorter or less expensive destinations, or they postpone holidays in total. I can go on and on. They reduce impulse purchases, become less loyal to brand stores and go to discounters. They look for deals and lower prices. So what we see in total, you see a shift in preferences and demand. So to more, probably more demand to a price entry products and to private labeling compared to brand products, and demand for some items might just shrink in unit terms, not so much in revenue terms, because inflation is increasing prices, so increasing price times, lower number of units might still increase the revenue, but in net terms it goes down. And this pressure, the demand pressure, but also the preference mix within the same assortment might reduce the inflation corrected ASP. So you might also have downward pressure from above. So the ASP, the average selling price, is decreasing, and this might cause a problem. And that's explained, as you said, we have profit warnings from Walmart already this year. Target has already two profit warnings. That's a sign. In terms of procurement cost, if you add all variable costs into it, like stocking cost for the excessive inventory, the pressure increases even more. So I would say the margins are under pressure for the foreseeable future. And the question is, how should companies react to this?
And that's actually my second question. How should the companies react to this? So if the retailers want somehow not only to survive, but also grow and thrive, because we know that the most challenged times are usually the times with the biggest opportunities. So what should retailers do to cope with these challenges?
Yes. My recommendation first is getting an overview on what is actually happening, because not all retailers are affected the same. Some retailers might even win. Zara, for example, is increasing revenues and profits. So other retailers are not affected. For example, if you are a sports company focusing on elite or expert sporters, they just buy the equipment, so they are not affected. And of course, there are a lot of companies who receive a lot of headwinds. And if you sell a large part of your inventory, these three buckets, benefiting, not affected, headwinds, they might be distributed within your assortment. And the first thing that I recommend is get an overview on what is happening. So what I usually advise is, just to find a term here, get an inflation information center, get early signals, get all your data to understand what is happening there and what will likely happen in the future. So you need also early signals. And how do we quantify the problem, quote unquote, inflation? What is the problem? So usually it's how much are increasing supply chain costs eating up our margin for which product? So to have a solid understanding. So then you put all your insights and conclusion out of these data and quantify the different drivers of the impact of inflation. So you have kind of headwinds, you have tailwinds, and you agree, and that's more or less the best part of the analysis about inflation impact drivers. You bring your executive suite on the same page, and we all agree, okay, inflation is a big topic. All our colleagues and senior executives and other company are also talking about this, and of course they talk to each other. And this is kind of a big elephant, and this is about slicing the elephant. What is the problem? And if all agree on the problem, we say, okay, we have a major impact on margin, not so much on growth, but on margin, and it comes either from these vendors for these products or for out of these customer groups. So, okay, we need to find something to address those. And then the third step is finding funding and setting up projects to address these adverse events. And then they professionally manage these projects and, that's important, measure the contribution to change, to counteract these pressures. So that's how you do it. And by the way, if you are a publicly listed company, that's the way how you can answer the question of analysts, what are you doing about inflation? And you said, okay, we looked at everything, we can quantify the total impact, we can bring it down to the five drivers that explain 80% of the total impact, and these are our five projects to address these five drivers. Next question. That's more or less how I could imagine how they do it.
Thank you. So probably the secret to success is just slicing an elephant. I love the metaphor.
Exactly. But if our listeners ask me about their three emergency strategies to keep profit high. Not so much about growth. I think currently it's about keeping the head above water. I don't know whether that's a perfect idiom here. I would suggest to run first a kind of a profitability sprint in your prices and increase unnecessary low prices. So in the easiest step would be, okay, all companies have calls with their suppliers and everybody is increasing their procurement cost, so they might increase their selling prices. And if your competitor crawling mechanism isn't updating frequently enough, all competitors might have raised their price already and you're still involuntarily price leading in the market. Honestly, if you don't crawl all your relevant competitors early enough or often enough and your frequency to price changes is not often enough, you end up in this kind of position. But this only explains what I mean. Increase unnecessary low prices. This also means raising the level of your profitability by implementing elasticity-based pricing, for example. Any signals that indicate the willingness to pay for your customers. You cannot raise your margins year after year after year, but from not doing it to doing it, you have at least a step change and then you at least increase the level of your average margin. But of course, if you do another elasticity-based initiative next year, you cannot widen the margin year over year. But that's the first step. Then I would suggest implementing any kind of price differentiation, either with rebates, with discounts. If you have online, offline, you could do offline a different price than online and offer a price matching guarantee. So if your competitors, for example, have a lower price, you would only match it if customers ask. I mean, you put a bit of friction into this relationship, but that's something you can do. What I frequently experience also in Germany, that offline stores have a different price than online. But if you ask for the online price, you get it. And if you present the online price of a competitor, you also get this one. And the third, and this has nothing so much to do with pricing, but you can use your pricing data and your competitor pricing data that you have available in your pricing function to negotiate procurement prices with your suppliers. So the third strategy is to systematically manage procurement prices in the vendor relationships that you have with your suppliers. These are the three things.
Whoa, thank you so much for diving so deep into three practical strategies. And moving from global to the individual, a lot of your fellow colleagues will be listening to this. So the first question is, what hard skills and soft skills you think pricing managers should have? And what advice would you give to those who are only starting their careers right now?
Yes, in terms of hard skills, they need a solid understanding and a bit of passion for numbers. So they need the tools, all the basic statistics, and a solid understanding on the benefits of experiments, for example. So quasi-experimental designs, how does kind of changing something leads to something that you clean out everything else and say, okay, this effect can be contributed or attributed to the action that we just took. So master's students with a deep dive into statistics would actually help. And then if you have this basic understanding of data, my understanding of pricing teams is they are usually very small and very, very alone. Because they have such a specialized knowledge, they don't have anybody to talk to, a sounding board within the company or, yeah. So this small team needs to understand statistics and data, and they need all the skills to extract those, like basic SQL skills, if you talk about the core foundations. Of course, they can have a BI team that helps them, but of course, they need to understand what they are doing. And for example, myself, I've been with a leading online retailer for more than 5 years. I was SQL tutor at the beginning, until that I don't have time for this anymore, unfortunately. But of course, you need to have very solid skills to manipulate and extract the data. So pricing teams are very, very hands-on. So once you understand the value of data, you can extract and do the analysis. Now it comes to a more or less hard soft skill type of thing. You need to explain it to somebody. Nobody understands if you show them numbers. Of course, you can do a table and bars and stuff. But colleagues in the category teams told me, Marcus, I don't know what is a t-test. Don't bother me with this. Okay, and that's, I understood, okay, not everybody here at this company has such a quantitative affinity as I did. So then you need to explain the story or bring up a story and say, okay, if you believe the story is true, what should the data tell us? Ah, they do. So, and you need to bring the data into a context that is related to business. Otherwise, analyses just for the sake of analyses are, by the way, not useful at all. So then, yeah, to explain the result to somebody who is not so much a number person. And that's like a very empathetic soft skill, honestly.
Thank you. So probably the perfect pricing manager right now is the database storyteller. Last, but probably not the least question, what pricing resources do you read, and what pricing resources, books, podcasts, maybe some personalities inspire you and you can advise our listeners to pay attention to?
I'm actually very old school, so I read books because they have more space to elaborate on a topic, more than 40 minutes that you usually have at a podcast. And I find it usually inspiring to talk to or listen to or read from other fellow seasoned experts like Hermann Simon or Stefan Liuzu or Mark Stiving. So these are the quote-unquote pricing celebrities that I recommend following. If you ask me for excellent resources or books, I try at least to read all books that get published on pricing. And the books that I currently recommend are, for example, The 1% Windfall, if you want to explain somebody the value of pricing. Or what I'm currently reading is Price for Growth from Jeff Robinson. That's also very inspiring. But if you have asked me last week, I would have mentioned something else. That's just what I'm coincidentally currently reading.
Well, all right. Thank you once again. Thank you for sharing. It was 30 minutes of pure pleasure and so much information.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our interview.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. I hope you enjoyed our interview. Follow our guest on LinkedIn and Twitter and check out his books. They are available on Amazon. And of course, check out our website, compatera.net, and follow Compatera on LinkedIn and Twitter to find out more about newest trends and solutions in pricing. All the links are in the description to this episode. Ciao, and till next time.